Tonight, my guest is Susan Allen, and she has an organization that's nonprofit called the Divorce Forum, and she's here to answer our questions about how to avoid divorce. She has a new system called the Heart Space System. So, Susan, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. It's great to see you again.
It's good. Yes, it's good to have you back. It really is. So can you tell us a little bit about, you've got this six-step process called the six-part conversation that will help us to avoid divorce and heartbreak. Do you want to lay out the process?
You bet. Absolutely. So step one is silent self-empathy. We know that if somebody is triggered, if someone is feeling frightened, angry, and or sad, there's very little chance that we're really going to enjoy what they have to say.
Mm.
And we can all think of 1,000 experiences just in probably in the last week where whoever was speaking to us and really wanted to be heard wasn't going to be heard by us because there was just so much emotion behind what they were saying, and it wasn't joy.
Right. It wasn't so unhappy.
Yeah. So the first step is, if you really want someone to listen to you, if you really want somebody to be heard, please learn how to calm yourself down before speaking. And that's silent self-empathy.
So, and how do you do silent self-empathy?
It's a very simple process. You notice what you're feeling. You link that feeling to your unmet need that is triggering the feeling. You take a deep yogic breath from your stomach. And then you check in to see what the next feeling and unmet need might be. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if somebody's calling someone to invite them out for Valentine's Day, and they're thinking about picking up the phone, before they pick up the phone, they might be noticed, I feel scared that my need for connection won't be met, and breathe. I feel worried that my need for affection, enthusiasm won't be met, breathe. I feel kind of concerned that my need to make plans with this person may not come through, and breathe. And little by little, with practice, the person gets very clear that it has nothing to do with you on the other end of the phone. It all has to do with either her or him before they pick up the phone. They've got this story running.
Sure.
So by practicing self-empathy, one gets into the habit of being calm before speaking, and then he or she's able to pick up the phone and say, you know, hi.
Mm-hmm. And be Is more present.
Linda? Right.
I would see that, you know, with self-empathy comes a lot of self-acceptance because you're accepting the way you're feeling. You're not Absolutely. Resisting and trying to suppress them or working against what's really going on. So that you're much more present and available with yourself. So there's a level of self-acceptance, which could also call self-love. You're being kind to yourself. Yeah. And so then the next step is to, you say, to have empathy.
Yeah, because the next step is to connect compassionately with you, the person who's answering the phone and saying hello. And so you are now hearing this person's voice, and the person sounds peaceful and enthusiastic. And now he or she asking you for a date is going to be connecting with what your needs are. Imagining that you're, you know, looking forward to doing something great on Valentine's Day. Imagining that you would love to go to some fabulous restaurant and have a wonderful dinner, or something more interesting than that, whatever that might be. Mm-hmm. But really connecting. Instead of, you know, how are you, what do you want to do for Valentine's Day, which doesn't indicate any kind of connection, any kind of real consideration. Someone who's already coming from, well, you know, Phyllis, I imagine that you are, you know, looking forward to my call, knowing, since I know you're in a relationship, knowing that, you know, we'd be making plans.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you do that, when you're in that state of empathy, the relationship becomes far more peaceful, far more cooperative.
Because you're putting yourself... You've already taken care of yourself, so you're not needy, so you can really be more present for the other person. And there's the other person can come forward, can make that step towards you because you're not there with your agenda. Here are my needs. And the anxiety is not there
yeah.
of getting your needs met. Because, yeah.
yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the number one shift. If you are beginning a conversation from a peaceful and joyous place, and you're connecting to whether your partner or friend or stranger is in a peaceful and connecting place, and if he or she's not, your empathy is going to bring them up to a higher vibrational state. And then, and only then, you would say, well, you know, thanks for letting me know that you are free, or, you know, we're looking forward to it. And, you know, I'm wondering if I could tell you a couple of options I thought of. No, I was thinking, yeah, yeah,
this going
is part
into the
three.
Third. Okay, yeah. Great. Yep.
I was thinking you might, I know we went to such and such, you know, in the restaurant last year and, you know, you really loved it. But the year before we went to the place that you liked even more. But this year I've got three new options. Would you be willing to hear a little bit about them? And so now you're motivating and inspiring your partner. It's not just kind of a dull, dead, oh my goodness, Valentine's Day again. How boring is this? You actually are demonstrating your love and your consideration for your partner and coming up with options that are fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a real invitation is anyway. And then let's say your partner is not excited about that for one reason or another. Maybe he or she wanted to invite you over for dinner. Maybe he or she's been planning to make some fabulous food that's red and white or pink or who knows what.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just doesn't want to go out. Oh, well, you know, I'm working hard that day and I just thought, you know, you'd come over, we'd have a quiet dinner and da-da-da. Well, great. Now you have to give more empathy. Ah, so I'm really grateful to hear that you don't really want to go out to any of these expensive restaurants, that in fact it sounds as if that's the last thing you want to do. Yes. So now you're still connected. Even though it's not the way you thought it would be, you're still connected.
If you can manage that. But I hear from a lot of women that they're, no, but if he doesn't take me out, for instance, to a fancy restaurant, that he doesn't love me, he's sloughing it off, he, you know, right? So then...
Well, it's interesting that you say that. I'm working with a new couple, and they happen to be based in Santa Barbara, but, you know, these issues are worldwide, because
sure.
I work with clients around the world over the phone. So this man started working with me because he was concerned about his marriage, long-term marriage. And he was concerned that no matter what he did, it really didn't meet his wife's needs. Well, now I've started working with his wife as well, and she's beginning to understand that she has an addiction to complaining. That not only does she not ask for what she wants in a way that it's possible to decipher the specifics.
So that would be skipping the third step of expression.
Yeah, you bet.
Right?
You bet. And so she doesn't really have that habit. She just expresses what she doesn't want. She talks about what she doesn't want so often that it's very confusing for me as a life coach and a stranger. I have no idea what I would do if I were going to throw my schedule aside as her husband and do the number one thing for her. I have no idea what that would look like. And so it was interesting. She was really moved to tears. She was in a tremendous amount of sadness as she realized that she's been living this story about what her husband doesn't do for decades, when in fact her style of communication is basically lacking the six-part conversation. And her husband is so thrilled and relieved because he's now been learning the six-part conversation, so he's able to support her in being more clear.
Isn't that great?
And this is easy stuff.
It's easy, and she had no idea that she was complaining.
Only complaining, endlessly complaining. I actually said, you know, I want you to understand that what I'm hearing is similar to a backseat driver.
Wonderful.
And I know you don't realize it. I know you don't understand that what you're saying is go faster, go slower, go left, go right. And your husband is really wanting you to do one of two things. Appreciate that he's the one driving or offer to drive next time. And those are really the two options that would work for him. And she said, I had no idea. And she said this with tremendous grief because she truly didn't know.
Yeah, I love that. I love hearing stories like that because she had all the best of intentions. She wasn't intentionally trying to hurt or belittle her husband. She truly loved him, but with a simple awareness of how the effects of her style of communicating can turn around a relationship.
And
instantly.
Three sessions. You know, that's the thing. On the third session, she had now heard me say it twice. And boom. Very, very exciting. Very exciting. So that's part three now, self-expression.
Okay.
Part four, reflection. You want to make sure message sent was message received. Most of us don't really check that out. We think it's going to take too long if we do. And yet I was working with another client today who's a corporate client in L.A., and she was hopeful that she could just like breeze through all this stuff. And I said, well, I feel concerned that your employees will not have heard what you wanted them to hear unless they've been trained in active listening. They probably won't. So what I want you to say is, would you be willing to let me know what you heard me say so I know if I was able to be clear?
That does sound like a lot For a lot of people, it's very awkward and a little bit self, what's the word I'm looking for?
You know, it's a little too formal for most people.
Yeah.
And yet the results of not being heard are disastrous, as you can imagine, sometimes even hazardous. And it's true that with a 70% divorce rate and all the other miseries people go through, that one simple sentence can save lives. It can also save the family fortune. So there's a lot going on here.
No, I agree with you, because we make an awful lot of assumptions in communication. We don't check out what the other person meant, and we just assume that we know what they meant.
Yeah.
And often you ask this kind of question and a whole new world opens up, right?
Yes. Yeah,
so Would you like to give an example? Have you got, you know, one where somebody said, what was the sentence that you say people should ask?
I'm wondering if you'd be willing to let me know, Phyllis, what you heard me say, so I know if I was able to be clear.
So you're checking out also that part of your communication.
Only. Yeah. Never implying that you, Phyllis, don't listen. Because actually, you always listen. Or that anybody else might not listen. Always knowing that it's my responsibility to communicate in such a way so that the person who I hope is hearing me is really hearing me. And now part five is clarification. Ah, thank you for letting me know I wasn't clear about this point. Now, it's really tempting to say it with an edge in your voice. Thank you, Bob, for letting me know I wasn't clear about what an idiot I think you are. You know, but the truth is, you know, that it's my responsibility to let Bob know that I'm expecting him to be ready at 8 because I'm picking him up, to take him to my favorite Valentine's Day restaurant to celebrate our 5th year together, that I want him to wear a sports jacket and a tie because I'm taking him to a fabulous restaurant and hopeful that this is something that would meet his needs too.
Because
you don't want to have the unpleasantness of showing up without any of those things in place after you've made all those plans. And if she's been with Bob for a while, she probably could look back at times when message sent was not message received.
Sure.
And only when she makes that request and he reflects it back might she find out, ah, thank you so much for letting me know, Bob, that no, we're not going, this is a surprise evening. So we're not going to the place you think where you don't need to wear a sports jacket or a tie. We're actually going someplace really phenomenal that you mentioned once years ago you'd always dreamed of going to, and now I'm not going to tell you what it is, but that's where, you know, that kind of stuff.
Great. Very clear that people don't, you know, always listen, and then you can take responsibility for your expression, for your way of communicating that wasn't clear enough.
Yeah,
so everybody's taking responsibility.
Yeah, and how about all the relationships that start when someone's not available?
Oh, the classic.
So
you're running into somebody on the computer and saying, we need to do this, this, and this, and they catch it. They're finally listening by the third point, right?
Yeah. So
I think I've done that a few times with my husband. Are you listening, Penny?
But even more, how about people who start relationships with someone who's not available, as in available for a relationship?
Oh, is that what you were talking about?
Yes, but well, I like
you. Let me clarify that.
And thank you for letting me know I wasn't clear. Yeah, I mean, so many people that begin to work with me are not working with me on divorce issues or marriage issues. They're wanting to be in a relationship. They're wanting to, maybe the first time in their lives, to be in a relationship that really works. And I've had 14 marriage proposals. So one thing that people can say about me is I know how to get someone to motivated and inspired to ask for, you know, hand in marriage. And most important thing is clarifying whether that's someone you'd want to propose to you.
Mm-hmm.
Would that person meet your needs as a potential husband or wife?
Sure. Well, and I think that this six-part conversation is a great way to get into a relationship, is to start at the beginning. I mean, that's a great way, obviously, to avoid divorce, is to create a great relationship. And all these skills are wonderful techniques to create a great relationship, to really start the listening. Because, you know, everyone says, why is divorce rate so high? And I say, oh, the cliche, you know, communication, troubles with communication.
They were never merged into a united tantric lock. They never merged into a union. Mm-hmm. They were always just two separate people, and you and I don't care if they were married for 100 years. If they never merged, they never merged.
We're talking with divorce prevention expert, Susan Allen, and about Heart Space, a system to avoid divorce and to prevent heartbreak. You're listening to member-supported Arts and Roots Radio, KCSN, 88.5 FM, named Best of LA by Los Angeles Magazine, and this is Shrink Wrap, and I'm marriage and family therapist Phyllis Chase. And Susan, I want to know what you mean, because this is one of your other techniques called the Tantric Lock. So please explain.
Thank you. The reason that people are divorcing with the frightening incidents that you described is because, as I said, they never became one. If you merge with anyone, then that person's needs are as important to you as your own, and vice versa. And that merging requires a sense of complete peace within yourself and an ability, when you're not feeling peace and when you're triggered, to bring yourself back to peace. I called it the 4.5 minute rule, that if you are not competent to do that under 5 minutes, then your partner is going to respond to your trigger, which is either going to look like your fear, your anger, or your sadness. And so nobody's going to be merging with a porcupine. And so in order to generate the tantric lock to begin with, you have to have certain skills of self-empathy and empathy for your partner. But most importantly, you've got to really be willing to do this, because a lot of people get into marriage, but they really want a lot of freedom. And that's fine as long as you communicate that honestly and openly with your partner before you get married, because you will not be able to do what I've just described. The tantric lock is not for you. The tantric lock is only for someone like clients of mine where the husband has said, I have committed my life to merging with my wife, to becoming the joyous, blissful partner she seeks, and to supporting her day after day in being that partner for me. And every month they go away to some fabulous vacation spot, and they spend most of their time alone in bed when they're on this vacation. Even though they go to singles resorts mostly, they spend most of their time alone. I was stunned. I said, that's the level of the tantric lock I never even thought of or even heard about. Yeah.
So you're saying the tantric lock is a process or a commitment, a decision to be monogamous? Is that what I'm hearing?
It's part of it.
Part of it.
But it's not only monogamy. Because how many people have you worked with in your career where they're monogamous and they hate each other? They're monogamous and they're resentful. They're monogamous and they're so furious that their needs haven't been met. And the tantric lock is about being fully committed to your own peace of mind. 1,000%. It's not your partner's job. And also being fully committed to bringing your partner back to peace when he or she is triggered. Again, you're fully, fully, fully present. You become that enlightened master in your own life. And when that is the ability and the habit that a partner has, then the other partner comes right into it, and together they merge into a joyous and blissful union, mm-hmm. only 100% of the time.
Only. Well, I think what you're talking about is actually a very complex process that a lot of people might not quite understand, that, you know, merging is not becoming one. I mean, there's two parts you're talking about. You're saying, one, that they are separate. They are responsible for themselves and bringing themselves to a peaceful, calm, non-anxious presence. Perhaps you'd describe
yeah,
it that way.
Exactly.
And that they can be there while their other partner might be in a spin. That's what I sort of call it. They're in their, you're watching your partner in their personal tantrum, their spin, they're angry, they're upset, they're in their own little tornado. And you can either jump in and get just as upset, or you can stand apart and witness their spin and be there when that partner is ready to come out of it.
The tantric lock contestant uh-huh. would never be willing to be in a relationship with someone who's still doing spins.
Okay.
It's impossible. It's a level of, it's not a vibrational state of joy and bliss, someone who still does that. And it just simply means that that person would want to learn the six-part conversation and master it first. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't mean that if you meet somebody who's fantastic and you fall for him or her and you want to be around him, or that it's hopeless. It's not at all. It's that You master the six-part conversation. You motivate and inspire your partner to master the six-part conversation. And then and only then is there this tantric lock happening. There's no way that anyone is going to be in a blissful union with, you know, a tornado. Mm-hmm. Even if that tornado is occurring once a year. Because those of us who live in L.A. know what it was like after the earthquake. You're always waiting, right?
Right, right. But do you think that, so tornado is maybe a very extreme expression. But I'm just talking about, you know, life happens. You know, you lose a job and you're upset. And
what does upset look like, though?
Right. If they're having a bit of a tantrum and they're just saying, you know, I can't believe this happened. They're in a victim in response.
Unacceptable for the tantric lock. Okay. Those people, I work with them all day long, and I don't work with them on that. That's a senior part of heart space. The people that I work with who are still very triggered and have to express their pain and have to raise their voice and all that stuff, that's human. That's perfectly normal. And that's not someone who's ready to bring forth the tantric lock.
Okay.
That's someone who's ready for the heart space system and not ready for the tantric lock. The tantric lock, you cannot merge with someone who may be screaming or yelling at any moment in time. It's not a physically safe merging.
Right. And while they're having a tantrum, they can't. But if you can witness them, if you're in relationship with somebody and life happens, no, you're saying, okay, that this person can never, ever have a tantrum.
There's a difference between an upset and a tantrum, but there's no reason for anyone who has the six-part conversation skills ever to have a tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people that I work with bring themselves back to peace in under 5 minutes.
Okay, but for 4 minutes, they can be in a spin.
No, they're not.
I think I'm going to challenge you because I really believe that that's asking an awful lot of a human being. I mean, are you saying that you never get upset and that you never have a four-minute tantrum? Because I know
I don't. Not in years.
Okay.
I discovered the six-part conversation many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that it's so effective is in that instant, you observe your trigger and you get silent and do silent self-empathy.
Mm-hmm.
In that process of silent self-empathy, mm-hmm. noticing what you're feeling, noticing what you're needing, you're not out there freaking out.
Right.
And that's the miracle. That's the miracle of this.
Well, you know, it depends, I guess, what your goals are. I mean, I never thought it was particularly wrong. So you're saying it's not appropriate or it's not a preferred or it's not even acceptable to have a tantrum. And I think, well, you have a 3-minute tantrum, big deal. You get yourself back on track. You know, that's human. You've gotten in touch with your pain. And so, I mean, I can understand it. I think it's a valid point that you're making that you can choose to not go there.
You know what happens to small children in that environment? They have a very, very, very dramatic impact on their adrenal system. You know, I work with the Santa Monica Wellness Center about this. I've sent 35 clients to the Santa Monica Wellness Center in the last year and a half to identify the level of adrenal cortisol that's regularly rolling through their system and to use a new system to get treated and cured of this whole thing. So I'm telling you that for mm-hmm. people who've been in this environment where somebody's losing it, it's very dangerous because you never know when that person's going to lose it next. And that means that a small child is going to be wary the entire time, or a dog, or a cat, or a bird. So the adrenocortisol addiction, the traumatic bonding challenge, the post-traumatic stress disorder, we now know, we have ample evidence, that it is the result of one adult in that household doing not what you do, I'm sure, but what other people listening may misunderstand is a satisfying behavior. Got to be so careful because there are children around and their systems are so sensitive. But I know you don't mean that, but I want to make sure that your listeners understand the difference.
Yeah, I mean, I think, stressors and cortisol levels, we can all certainly reduce them and work to reduce them. I guess I have that a little bit of the concern of inviting people to a standard that they can't quite reach out there and beating up on themselves. So I think it's, you know, the more we can do to be peaceful human beings and to learn the techniques to you know, not tantrum or not yell is great. I really do. And I commend you for this work. I think these techniques they're teaching are really wonderful. So thank you.
Well, you know, the whole idea of my free sessions, I offer a free session to anybody, is anyone who doesn't believe it's possible that these skills can offer them a shift, an alternative, call me.